The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and today it is rock and roll as we are getting into Jose Mangan's world, the ambassador of heavy metal music on satellite radio, the man behind Heart Attack, Liquid Metal, Ozzy's Boneyard, and the early days of Octane on Sirius XM. He is bringing his crazy rock and roll stories to Talk is Jericho. Wait till you hear how I met his music idol, Dimebag Darrell from Pantera. Great story that totally backs up the concept that Dime was a big fan of his fans. Talking with James Hetfield and the guys in Metallica, personally requesting Jose to introduce them at the Yankee Stadium Big Four show. Sharon and Ozzy asked Jose to launch Ozzy's Boneyard, which he did. He's got more stories about Dave Mustaine performing on stage with Anthrax and his new favorite band and Fozzy's favorite band as well, King. In fact, Jose is the reason that King opened up the Fozzy Judas Rising tour, the first leg that we did in May. King is great. Jose is great. Jose is carrying the heavy metal flag, keeping the fire burning and spreading the love for all things rock and roll. And so is Fozzy, especially in the UK and Europe. When we return for the next leg of the Judas Rising tour in October, November, we start in Birmingham, England on the 27th, Dublin, Belfast, Chester, Manchester, London, Sheffield, Glasgow, Newcastle. Then we head over to the mainland of Amsterdam, Aschaffenburg, Pretel, Roncade, Rome, Vienna, Munich, Essen, Hamburg, Genk, all of the rock and roll shows, all VIP meet and greets, all pre-show rock and roll concerts that we're doing, available at FozzyRock.com. Go check it out. Get all your tickets available there, and the great VIP package that we have where we do play a mini concert as well as hanging out with the band. Go to FozzyRock.com. Check it out, and you know we'll be playing the biggest song in Fozzy's history. The video is almost at 5.5 million views. Let's talk about Judas. Let's play Judas right here on Talk is Jericho.
You are beautiful on the inside. You are innocence personified. And I will drag you down and sell you out. Run. I have carved out this soul made of stone, and I will drag you down and sell you out. Embraced by the darkness, I'm losing the light, encircled by demons.
Try It, the new Fozzy record, will be out in September. In the meantime, and in between time, you got Judas to check it out. Jose Mangan, no stranger to Judas, as Octane has been playing the crap out of it. Thanks to all of you who requested on Octane. Thanks for Jose for giving it a chance.
Talk is Jericho.
We're on the back of the Fozzy tour bus with Jose Mangan. Probably known you. I was thinking the other day, I probably met you. Like, when did you start at XM? 2000? Wow.
I started in the summer of 2000.
So 16, 17 years. And a lot of similarities between the two of us. And that now, here we are in 2017. And you've built the Jose Mangan brand to where you started at XM. And now you're like your own industry, the Jose Mangan heavy metal industry.
That's so fun. I'm just having a weird moment right here, dude, looking at you and doing this, because I've always wanted to be part of your podcast. Uh-huh. And I was like wondering, like, oh, I hope I get the invite one day. And now it's just like hitting me right now. Yeah. What's up, Chris? Thanks for having me on, bro. This is really cool.
Well, last week we were riding around. Yeah. We were at Carolina Rebellion.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
You had your Jeep with all the GoPros. Yeah, and you were doing something for
Zippo.
Zippo.
Yeah, I'm out here. Zippo hired me to do some stuff this festival season to be in charge of or the content for their Zippo Encore music program. A lot of these companies, they pay big bucks, man, to sponsor these kind of festivals, and they help these festivals out as well, you know, with because it costs a lot of money to put these things on. So I love that Zippo supports rock music, and they came to me and they were like, dude, will you host these acoustic sessions for us? We drive people around and talk shit in this Jeep. And I'm like, that's the cool part.
Right.
You know, I've done a lot of introducing bands and things like that, but I was like, I want to do the cool thing in the car.
Kind of on the spot, driving around in the car, because like we saw Michael Polson from Volbeat, and we saw Caggiano, just whoever you run into.
Yep.
Just invite them into the conversation as well.
It's pretty cool. I was driving corn around last week, and Jeff Keith from Tesla was warming up. And I love Tesla, and so did the guys. And it was Fieldy and Monkey in the car. And we were like, hey, Jeff, Tesla. And then he was looking over. He had his in-ears in. And he was like, I can't hear you. And I was like, I'm with Korn. And then he finally came over, and then he saw who it was, and he sang a piece of Got the Life to the guys in Korn. And we had the cool fisheye on that camera, so like you can see him perfectly on the view of the camera, and it was really cool.
Do you notice that quite a bit? Like, you're talking about Korn, who's obviously famous for a certain style of, like, the quote-unquote new metal music. When they see Jeff Keith from Tesla, are they Tesla fans as well?
I love it. I love seeing bands fanboy out, because I fanboy out all the time.
Yeah, sure.
I'm a huge, huge fanboy of this stuff, and I love to see that genuine side come out with these artists. Yeah, I mean, they were real Tesla fans. Head was on stage, and so was Fieldy during Tesla, and I was right in the front in the photo pit. Singing. I was the only dude right there. There was nobody around me, and Jeff was probably like, who is this dude? Actually, I talked to one of the guys that was running the cable truck at Carolina Rebellion, and for the broadcast and for all the camera stuff, and they were even saying, some of like the producer dude, who's that guy in the front and by himself, like he's not taking pictures, like he's just singing every word.
But see, that's you though, man. Like, you're always super stoked, super I'm not gonna say hyper, but hyper in a good way.
No,
actually remind me, I don't know if you've ever met him, but I've done the Jimmy Fallon show 3 or 4 times.
Oh, wow.
He reminds me a lot of you. He's just genuinely happy to be there.
I love Jimmy. That's awesome that you said
same
that.
Vibe. Because, hey, what's up, dude? How you doing? What's going on? Like, this guy's really happy with what he does, and you have the same vibe. You really enjoy this.
Dude, Chris, I mean, I know you're a massive fan of the music, and you've been raised on it. Me too, dude. I mean, this is my whole life. I've been a metalhead, never for glory or for money or anything. Just that was what I knew and made me feel the best.
Right.
It was metal. Mm-hmm. And I just never left it. I always promoted it. I was always a deliverer of metal, you know. Even when I was a kid, I remember in high school, we would have parties at my friend Vito's place in Douglas, Arizona, right on the Mexican border in Arizona. And on top of his shack, I set up a stereo and put some speakers up there, and I would sit up there and then just play different CDs and out of the little Sony Walkman and like play stuff and like say, hey guys, you know, no microphone. Hey guys, this is the new one from Fear Factory. You guys, you know, and nobody cared.
Right.
But there's probably like one dude that was like, oh, that's cool. You know, like my best friend, probably Andrew, was like the only dude that gave a shit. But I did that stuff, and I always, and even in my Subaru. I had a Pantera. I got it limo tinted in Mexico, but in the back window in silver limo tint, I had to do cut out the Pantera logo. So it was a big ass Pantera logo on the back of my little 85 Subaru. And just driving that around with my friends, you know, smoking weed and introducing them to metal.
Right, right.
I always did it, dude. So now, after all these years, to be able to be blessed and to, you know, have a career out of it. What?
And a huge career, because like you said, like there's two guys when you think of kind of the ambassadors for heavy metal. The older school would be Eddie Trunk,
yes, sir,
and then Jose Mangan. It's like you are like the next generation Eddie Trunk of like just taking all of this music and giving artists a chance to promote themselves. And you play the music and interview them, and Eddie's the same, but like you are now becoming just the same level as him.
I feel like, you know, I love working with Eddie, you know, at SiriusXM. We've been together for a while now. I think I come at with a different approach, you know, to it as well. I mean, I think I love opening up my life to the bands, and they stay at my house.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, I just
taco parties.
We feed them, we clothe them, we drink them. You know, whatever it is, I want to give back to the bands, to the fans, and so. I feel like my role as a metal dude never stops. Like, I'm not off. Mm-hmm. I'm not working right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm never, everywhere I go, dude, I'm just Uber drivers. Like, I mean, it's disgusting, dude. Like, everything I do, Chris, is metal. And I feel like if I keep remaining that core, you know, stance, then the world pays me back, and then people are good to me. Good things happen, you know. So,
but you have influence now. Like, for example, you know, King is on this tour with us. We're sharing a bus.
Thank you, Chris. That's so cool. I love King. But, walking into the bus and seeing King, I was like, whoa!
Yeah,
I love it. I love it. So those are my best friends.
But
in the
you were so supportive of them. That's how I became familiar with them. Yeah. Was from seeing them on your Instagram or hearing them on the radio when you're playing them. So when you get behind a band, there is some credit behind that.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And that's just, you know, we do have a very cool following on SiriusXM, you know, when a lot of people came over for Howard, but they were rock fans. And when they came, you know, that's when my life changed big time. And that's when the influence became more apparent and obvious. You know, I don't want to think about the impact as much as just doing it. As opposed to what the band's gonna get out of this, or what am I gonna get from this, or whatever. Like, I just want to do good and help good people. And King, dude, and 12 Foot Ninja, and so many bands that I love, and even the veteran bands, Chris, that I'm able to help now when people probably wouldn't, you know, care so much
like
about.
Who?
Some of the veteran bands like Death Angel, Anthrax, mm-hmm. Testament, all the bands that we love, you know.
Gotcha, yeah.
But I mean, they keep on putting out amazing music, and I'm like the loudest dude screaming, dude, Anthrax got a new album, you know.
Yeah.
And like, to give back to the veterans is what makes me very satisfied too. To have idols become friends, mm-hmm. as you know,
sure,
that's
one of the coolest things.
The most beautiful thing of this whole experience is having idols become friends. You know,
yeah.
Dave Mustaine, dude, like, loves me and I love him, but it took a while to get to that sweet spot with him, you know.
It takes a while to kind of get behind the guy's walls, because
of course, and especially these dudes that are just so iconic, you know. And James Hetfield, man, and you know,
James is a quiet, private guy,
and when he reaches out and says cool things and does things, like in Rolling Stone magazine, James Hetfield in 2008, this is the biggest thing that happened to me up to that point in my life, when I was just like, holy shit, really. Rolling Stone did a little interview with James. It was like, it was just a quick little one-page Q&A. And they asked him what he's listening to these days. And then he said, my station, Heart Attack on Sirius. There's this DJ on there. He's a firecracker ball of energy, but love listening to him. His name's Jose and all this stuff. And I was alerted to it from a record label, called me in the morning. I was on a bus to going into New York City. And this dude texted me, actually. He was like, dude, congrats, dude. James, shout out in Rolling Stone. I'm like, what? what are you talking about, dude? And then I went to the newsstand in Port Authority and got the magazine and was flipping through the pages. And there was a line of people there, I remember, waiting. And I was going through and I was like, and I found it. And I was like, and I was like, oh my God. And I was showing like the Indian lady in line and some other people in line.
That's me.
Yes, dude, he's talking about me. And they were so happy. The clerk was so stoked. And dude, like I had some tears, dude. Mm-hmm. I'm not even kidding you, dude. I was like, wow. Like one of my idols just gave me a fucking shout out, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like what the fuck?
Right.
And then years later, you know, they asked me to introduce them at Yankee Stadium at the Big Four show and introducing them at the Apollo for SiriusXM.
I remember that one. I listened
live
to
broadcast.
That one, yeah.
Like that gives me just chills to be able
and that's
to
the
do
band
that kind of
personally asking you to do
yeah,
this.
I mean, this is yes. And then James emailing me asking me to help put bands on Orion 1 and 2. And
wow.
So when I get that email, Chris, like I when I first saw that James email, I was shaking. I was like, I can't respond right away because I don't want him to feel like I'm like super desperate.
It's like if a super
weird.
Hot chick calls you, you have to wait a bit, right?
You have to wait. Even when your idols email you, you have to give it a little buffer.
Yeah.
Like you can't be freaky fast. But then again, like you sit on it and you're so freaked out about it that you don't email back, like maybe until like the next day. You're like, oh God, like I hope it's not late. I hope he still has the same email.
It's so funny because you still have that. Like I do it like not to be name dropping. We're just talking guys that are friends. And for me, it's Paul Stanley and Lars.
Yeah.
And the same thing. Like if Lars sends me a text, I'm like, well, he's around. Maybe he's texting right now, but I don't want to text him back right away. So I remember my friend goes, you have to treat Lars like he's the hottest chick.
Yes.
And just treat it be very cool.
I do the same thing. I do the same thing, Chris. And it's like, I don't think I did it on purpose, but it just ended up being like when big dudes email. So then, you know what? The first band I had on the list, actually my daughter, and I posted a picture years ago, but my oldest daughter at the time, she's almost 14, but on a piece of paper, she wrote out the bands that she wanted to on Orion Fest, and the first band that she had was King.
Wow.
And they were on my list, too, but I sent him an email list, and then I sent him a picture of that picture that Maya drew.
Yeah.
And that made the internet. It was super cool. But James had King.
That's where I saw them there, and James personally introduced them.
Yes.
That's when I met the guys.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when I emailed him and he was like, dude, I love King. I listened to them on you know, Liquid Metal. And I'm like, oh, all right, James. Like, what, dude? So things like that, dude. Yeah.
So tell us about Yankee Stadium, because that's the Big Four show. Metallica, Anthrax, Megadeth, and Slayer. And playing Yankee Stadium, they ask you to introduce them.
Dude, we were doing a broadcast for Liquid Metal, and I was doing it by myself. I do a lot of these things. I hosted Headbangers Ball at the time as well, and it was by myself. It was MTV2.com, but I had Headbangers Ball in a bag.
Like your portable rig or something?
Yeah, and just a camera,
recorder
with the microphones hooked up, and this hooked up to an eighth inch into the camera itself.
Gotcha.
So I didn't have to seg sound and video. I would just take this nice recorder, eighth inch, you know what I'm saying, into my camera input. And then that was the audio.
Start at the same time. Okay.
And then we just hit the camera, put it on the stand, ask a tour manager or stranger to hold the camera, please. And that's how. But my friend was with me that day, and Annabella, and we did all interviews with all four bands. And James laughed at me, dude. He was like, because I knew he approved a video interview. It was the only video interview he did, I pulled it out, and he was like, that's the Headbangers Ball, Jose. And I'm like, James, it's sad, but this is what it is now.
It's been reduced to.
This is what it is. He's like, in a bag, dude? I'm like, yeah, man. And so it was in a little bag, but I pulled it out, and I did. So anyways, we were doing this broadcast, and I didn't know I was doing that until watching Slayer from the press box. I was finally eating. I didn't eat all day, and I was just inhaling some chicken tenders when I got the call from Warren Christensen, the manager, one of the managers of Q Prime. Mm-hmm. And he was like, hey, we want you to do the intro for Metallica. And all of a sudden, like, I just puckered up. I just got so nervous, like, my butthole closed, like, everything just happened. I couldn't eat any more of my tenders. Like, I wanted to finish eating. And I just got so nervous, and I didn't know what I was going to say. And I went out there, and it was a soft intro. It wasn't a hard intro, you know what I mean?
Meaning?
Like, a few minutes before they could take to stage.
Gotcha, gotcha.
So it wasn't like, and here's Metallica. Yeah. Oh, and then the intro comes on. No. So it was a soft intro, but I went out there. And I was freaking out, and
there's
I went
60,000 people there.
Yeah,
at least.
Yeah. And the Jumbotrons. I didn't know the Jumbotrons were on until somebody sent me a picture of me on the Jumbotron. But I went out there, and dude, it was like a 3-minute thing, and I didn't know what I was gonna say. All I knew that I was gonna curse once. The only thing in my head, because Dave Mustaine, years before, pulled me aside. I was hosting Jägermeister tours, Anthrax, Slayer, and Megadeth, and Dave pulled me aside, and he gave me a lot of advice, like, you know, cursing on stage, you know, you shouldn't do it, you shouldn't rely on it, it doesn't look good, you know, think about their spin.
And he was classic Dave.
Yeah, and he was telling
right.
me, and yeah, I know he is.
Yeah.
And so, and I was all right, so. I always think of Dave Mustaine when I do intros on stage, always. And so for that one, I was like, I'm going to curse once. F***ing Slayer. Mm-hmm. And I went out and I was like, hey, you know, Anthrax, hometown, you know, show, Anthrax Day. And I was like, Anthrax, you know. And then I was like, Megadeth, blah, 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 Megadeth. And then it was like, you know, and then you know, and then I started just talking about what we, you know, what I do and with Sirius XM and how much we all love Metallica and how this is a historic day here on the East Coast. It was the East Coast's biggest metal show ever, and I just like we're all part of this, like each and every one of us. Like I just wanted to reinforce the obvious and state it. You know what I mean? And that's what I love to do is like look how cool this is.
Yeah.
Look what we're doing. Look at who just played, and look who's about to play. And I said all this stuff, and then Metallica. And then the next morning, I was police officers and firefighters. There was a bunch of them along the back of the walkway of the stage. They were all, Jose, giving me fives. I was like, holy, my phone was.
Because everyone saw you.
nonstop. The next morning, hungover, tired, went to work, and on the front page of the New York Times, the write-up of the Big Four, the first paragraph, Sirius XM Liquid Metal host Jose Mangan introduced Metallica and summed up the night perfectly with this.
Nice.
And they quoted me and like a sentence or two of mine, like a good chunk. And then, dude, the president's assistant came in, brought the newspaper and put it on my desk and said, the president wants to talk to you. And I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. And so I went over there. And up until that point, Chris, I'll be honest, dude, I got in trouble hosting things.
Why?
And doing. I had a boss at Sirius XM at the time. He's no longer there, but he was. He was a real.
He didn't want you going out and doing outside things.
No, he wanted me to always ask permission, and I would always take vacation days, and you know I want to help my family, dude. I got to help my family, yeah. You know, however I can to do you know stuff that's great and good, you know, and always cheerleading Sirius XM, but I would get in trouble for like going in front of Mayhem Fest audiences or big audiences, and you know, and not in trouble, but. He would give me a really hard time, and it was scary. You know, I was always like scared, and it was weird.
WWE was like that, where if you went and did outside stuff, they would almost get mad at you for it.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, it just makes you a bigger name and promotes your company. So what's the problem?
And everywhere I go, Chris. Everywhere I go, the first thing that people say, you know, or what I say, I'm Sirius XM.
Yeah,
I'm proud. 17 years I've been there. Proud, dude.
That's a long time.
Like, so it comes out of me everywhere. And so, I always wondered why they would be mad that I was such a vocal public, more than any other employee in the whole company.
Yeah.
Nobody cheerleads Sirius XM as hard as I do. There's not one person there, dude. There's nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody. Consistently over the years. So with that, I went to the president's office, right? And he was like, Scott Greenstein, super cool dude. I love him. He loves me. He was like, Jose, how'd you do this? What? And I'm like, dude, I don't know, Scott. Like, they just asked me to do it. Like, did you know you were going to do this? Did you write down what you were going to say? Did you know? And I was like, no, I'm trained every day, Scott, on the radio. Like, I don't.
Right.
I just talk every day about this stuff. And he was just like, you know, so you didn't rehearse none of that stuff. And I was like, no, sir. Like, and he was like, this is great. He was like, we need more people like you doing this stuff. You know, you can do this. And I'm like, Scott, because he knew of the situation and stuff too. And he was always cool, but my direct guy wasn't. You know what I mean? Right. So, and he was like, "Dude, keep doing this." And I was like, "Yeah." And then high five. And I was, and at that point, Chris, September 12th. Or September 13th, maybe that morning, 2011, my life changed big time at SiriusXM, and I had more I was able to do more.
They gave you more responsibility.
Not so much responsibility. They said, "We got you, dude.
Gotcha.
We got you.
Go do your thing.
Do your thing, dude. We got you." Because they knew, and then you know now I'm known proudly as the SiriusXM spirit animal, like you know, like that.
You're the face,
dude. Yeah. I mean. And especially for this rock music, man. Who else? You know, we have a lot of cool friends in the digital realm of supporting music and stuff. But you know, where are they at the shows and at these festivals?
Right.
Do you know? Are they, you know, in the mosh pits with the crowd? Are they smoking joints with the dudes in the back? You know, watching a cool band? Are they on stage delivering a positive, good message? You know, about what they do and what the music does for them and for us? You know, no,
right.
They're not. You know, so for me, I love being that dude, man. I love. Always having that on my shoulder, and like I said, everywhere I go, dude, I bleed this shit.
Do you remember you're talking about like a last minute thing? Do you remember when we were doing something and we were doing some interviews and stuff, and then you wanted to do like a Chris Jericho hour long takeover or something, and they only gave us the studio for 10 minutes.
Oh yeah,
well, someone was waiting outside to get in. You remember that,
dude? Well, the thing about you, dude, you're so pro, you're so fast. I mean, I can do that same shit too.
Right.
Somebody said pick 10 songs and talk about them now, and you have 4 minutes,
and that's what we did.
Yeah, and then you nailed, you know, Iron Maiden, Halloween, Event Sevenfold, all these great picks, all these great cool stories. One take, because you're used to it.
Right.
And I feel like if you're gonna be an awesome talent, you have to be able to do things.
You have to be able to
one,
do that.
One, two, three, go.
Right.
Like, oh, let me prepare. Let me think. Let me write shit down. No.
Don't work that way.
Don't. You can't.
It's like you said, okay, Ozzy's outside and they want to do an interview.
Yeah.
We got to go.
Yeah.
Well, what am I going to say?
Nothing.
You better think of something.
Yeah. I wouldn't even, in my head, I would say that, but I wouldn't even say it out loud.
Let's do it.
Because I got it. Yeah.
Right.
You have to be able to, and there's a lot of talent that's not that way.
Mm-hmm.
They're not, you know, and a lot of people don't see the takes and the edits and the revisions and the take after take after take after take. You know, what I work with people on a video format, like last year I did Access TV Carolina Rebellion coverage for 3 days, and that was super fun, and I just wanted to nail it one take. And I told the editor and the main director dude from the beginning, I was like, "I got this, guys." And they were like, "Oh well, last year's host, you know, this like, dude, don't worry, guys, I'm gonna make this easy for you." And it was their first time working with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just boom, they were like, "Dude, okay, all right, let's do it. All right, well, let's do the next one. Let's do it here. Do this." And then all right, ready?
Yeah, let's go.
Go. Tell me when. Hey, na-na-na-na-na-na, and you're walking and doing all this stuff, and they're like, damn.
But what a great talent to have.
You know, man, that's just years and years and years and years of every day being on the radio.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk is Jericho.
Who are some of your favorite guests to have on that you could just riff with in that same vein?
Oh, well, I mean, you're super fast. Corey Taylor.
Oh,
you know,
great.
Yeah, I mean, some of these dudes that are just instant, quick, and great people to have on the radio. Who else is really good? Oh, man. So Corey, Chris Jericho. hold on. There's a bunch, dude. who's really good? Sometimes they're good, but I get nervous around them too sometimes.
Like, who's some of the guys you had that made you nervous?
I mean, Dave Mustaine, dude.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Come on, dude. Like,
Dave is very quick, and also he's got that sardonic...
Yeah,
kind of sarcastic.
But also, when you're doing things, he's quick, but he'll look at you Yeah. And you don't see him looking at you, or the people don't see it, but I'm looking at him looking at me, and it's so. But Corey won't do that. He uses his words. Mm-hmm. So Dave uses stares, but I've been nervous around. I mean, Hetfield. I don't get nervous around Ozzy anymore. I've been with Ozzy.
Did you used to get nervous? Around
yes,
Ozzy?
Of course. In the beginning,
you've done a lot of stuff like
everything.
Town halls.
I built
Sabbath.
Ozzy's Boneyard from the beginning, with Ozzy. And
tell
Sharon.
Us about that. So the Boneyard was a station on XM.
Yes.
And then it became Ozzy's Boneyard.
When we merged, it was I programmed Buzzsaw on Sirius, and then there was Boneyard on XM. So, and there was the two different companies. You know, for a while we were enemies. I mean, we hated each other, and it was
right.
very obvious. And we would see each other at conventions and things, and it was violent. Not really, but kind of.
But there were two separate competing companies.
Two separate companies, and we were always, in my head, Liquid Metal was XM, Heart Attack was my channel, and I love Heart Attack, the name. I miss it so much. When we got Liquid Metal, I was a sad, sounds like a Chinese laxative. You know, just with writing copy, I write all the copy for the channel, so, you know, something about metal on Liquid Metal. You know, it's like, it limits how you have to be.
It reminds me of Terminator 2.
Remember when they freeze
them and then the liquid metal joins up and then
Chinese
it becomes
laxative is what I think of for some.
Yeah.
But I never, I mean, the name, even it's hard to say, you know, even when you're hauling ass, you know, Heart Attack sounds cooler.
Yeah.
You know, you make the fist, you know, liquid, you know, you got liquid, you know what I mean? It's like a weird liquid metal. You lick liquid. But anyway, I forgot. Oh, so yeah. So Boneyard was XM. Buzzsaw was the hard and heavy classic rock station on Sirius. And we merged and then it was Boneyard. But to brand it with an artist, a celebrity, which Sirius likes to do in a cool way, they were like, you know, they came to me and they were like, hey, how's, what if we work with Ozzy? I'm like, oh my God, please, yes, you know? And so it was crazy because I programmed Octane and Liquid Metal, or it was Heart Attack, Liquid Metal. So I was doing the two stations forever, and those are my two babies. And then Ozzy and Sharon signed on with us, and then my boss called me up and said, hey, Ozzy and Sharon want you to program Ozzy's Boneyard, and that's they want you to do it. They personally said that basically Jose has to program it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, wow, that's what a cool honor, you know? Okay, but you're going to have to give up one of your channels. And I'm like, oh. So it was a morning where I made the decision. I'm like, well, I'm not giving up Liquid Metal. That's my baby.
Right.
So I guess I won't program Octane. So I didn't program Octane from that point on. My a few other people kind of took it in the interim, and then my protege, Vincent Ussarello,
yeah.
He's my boy, dude. He was my right-hand dude for years on my channels, and now he's doing Octane, and
I love that. What does that mean, programming? Like, how does that,
all,
satellite radio?
All the music. We are in charge of all the music that you hear on the channel, the rotation, the frequency, the categories, the library, the current. The recurrence, the stuff that's been out that's popular that you still want to play, but you're slowing it down because we played it so much already. It's art. It's math. It's science. I love it. That's why I mean.
So it's not a matter of just pressing shuffle on a computer.
No, God,
going.
No.
So you're writing. You're putting every track in.
It's part of a programming system. So it's scheduled by clocks. We design clocks, and we can have 100 different clocks, and each clock is an hour, and you break it down into the hour. So you have what categories are the active categories you're picking from. How often are they called upon in that hour versus the whole day versus the week equals the rotation of a week, right? So if I have a category that has five songs and I play it every hour, what's the turnover? Every 5 hours the song plays, right?
Right.
So if I have a category with three songs in it, you know, which is my hyper over-exciter category, I call as a little overkill exciter combo. Shout out.
Violence and Force.
Yes, sir.
Shout out to Canada's Finest.
And Bobby, too. What's up, Jersey? So, but in my over-exciter, that I have three songs in there, so I play that category once an hour, so that means that song plays every 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do things where we program it so that a band doesn't, and the song doesn't play in the same hour that the day prior, because what if you were driving at 5 o'clock every day and then you hear the same, you're like, this is ridiculous.
Totally.
And there's bad FM programmers all the time.
That happens on Hits 1 because my kids listen to it.
Hits 1 is different because the rotations are so fast.
You'll hear the same song every 45 minutes.
Yeah,
it's
well,
crazy.
They spin songs, you know, 80, 90, 100 times a week maybe.
Right.
Where on Liquid Metal, my fastest spinning song, you know, might be 30.
Mm.
You know? So 30 spins a week.
Right.
And I mean that's
four spins a day, basically.
It's a lot, but it's not. I mean,
yeah,
it's not.
4 days is not bad.
No,
it's
not, because people that listen all the time, really, you play that song too much. Really, dude? Like, you must be listening. You know what I mean? People that say you never play this or you always play this, it's like they don't really know, because it is 24/7. We never stop. We've never stopped. Even on vacation, deaths, pregnancies, births,
whatever.
Everything.
Yeah.
Like, I have to program my channels. Like, I don't have anybody that backs me up on that. My friend does, if it was, but it's my job as the programmer is to always have the music ready.
Is it a weekly thing where you guys sit down every week?
No, I do it every day.
So every day you sit down and program
For days in advance.
Gotcha.
So I program days in advance. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So, but it is a science. It's a lot of things, and it's mostly like all my favorite shit. You know.
Yeah.
You know, I drive around listening to it, and I love it so much. And then I forget that I'm in charge of it, you know? And I'll hear songs about things, and I'll hear little cool sets, and I do little invisible things that only fans would know.
Like what?
Putting songs together, you know, maybe...
like a group or something?
Yeah, it was just like, you know, maybe Dez, Devil Driver, and then Dez guest appearing on something else.
Gotcha.
You know, but you wouldn't know it unless you maybe knew, you heard that little piece of Dez and that following song. I do that a lot with Max Cavalera. He's one of my idols and dear friends, but just things like that, you know, Vinny's, the Dimes. I just do little cool things. And
now you're also a big Pantera fan, right?
That's my favorite band, in my life. Yeah.
So when you started in Sirius in 2000, did you ever get a chance to interview Dime and hang out with Dime?
Dude, the one time that Dime and Vinny came up for Pantera, it was 2000, and it was a Revolution, right before they stopped doing their stuff. But they did come up for. In the beginning, and I was on vacation in Arizona.
Oh, no.
And I wasn't there, but my friend Don Kay, one of the guys that hired me, and he was one of the first rock dudes there, he got a picture that Dime signed to me. But I had met Dime when I was in high school.
Really?
So I got...
Where?
Yeah, this is a cool story. Do we have time for it? I'm just kidding.
Of course we have time.
So it was, I was in high school, and it was Pantera, Sepultura Prong, Compton Terrace, south of Phoenix in the Indian Reservation. And I had tickets. We drove up about 3.5 hours from Douglas, Arizona to the Pantera show. So
Douglas is pretty border town, isn't
it? It's on the border.
Yeah.
My house was 9 blocks from the fence. Yeah, so I'm from the fence.
Right.
So we went up with my friend Jerome, and his sister drove us because we weren't, you know, we had to get someone old enough to drive. So I think four of us went to the show. We were at, I was rolling a joint in the grass area in the amphitheater, and this dude with a bunch of laminates came by, and he was like, "Hey man, do you have any weed?" You know, and I didn't see his laminates at first. He just came, "Hey man, like, do you have any weed?" And I kind of hit it, you know. I didn't know who it was. Like, "No, I don't have any, man." You know, I had super long hair, and he was like, "All right, man." I was like, kind of mean, and then he was like, "Oh, well, I was gonna have some. I had some after show passes or something if you wanted to train." I was like, "Whoa, come back!" And then he came back, and then I gave him like half my bag, you know, which was a quarter or whatever, and he gave me 2 Pantera after show meet and greet stuff.
Yeah.
And so my friend Jerome and I, we didn't get it for his sister, we just got 2 for my friend and I. So we waited after the Pantera show, the band didn't come by, his sister was like, "I'm leaving," and we were like, "No, please," like, we were, "Please, no, we want to meet Pantera." They weren't coming back, people were leaving, walking out, and then I was like, "This, I have to see if I can see them. I'm backstage." So I went between 2 semis. My friend, he's like, "Where are you going?" I'm like, I just got to go find him, dude. I got to go find him. Went between 2 semis that were parked backstage, like these trucks, you know. And I walked like sideways, like through this truck, and I got to the other side, and there was this dude. They were loading up a truck, and one of the guys kind of got stuck, and you know, and I right away got up and I helped him, and I helped him push the thing into the truck, and he was like, "Hey, thanks, man. Oh, no problem." So some people kind of saw me do that, so they didn't like kick me out.
The figure with the crew.
Yeah, and I had super long hair, and you know,
looked like a roadie.
Yeah, and so I saw, and then at that moment, right behind me was like a trailer with like a trailer, these outdoor ones.
Like an RV, yeah.
Yeah, and so the sliding glass door opens, and then I hear Dime, and he's right inside. The curtain opens as somebody's coming out, and there was security guard talking to this blonde chick, this like, you know, groupie chick. And then I was like, Dime's right there. So then I was walking down the ramp. This girl takes the security guard just away from the door for a brief moment. I darted up those wooden stairs, got the sliding glass door, opened it, shut it behind me, and it was Dimebag, Vinny, Paolo from Sepultura, Tommy from Prong, and they were in a circle, and then Dime turned around and was like, "What's up, dude? Can I help you?" And I'm like, and I just got my Pantera tattoo on my shoulder, my CFH, and I went up to him and I was like, "Hey, Dime, dude, check it out, scarred for life, man." And he was like, "Dude, man, yeah." And he gave me a high, gave me a hug. He's like, "Well, you want something to drink?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm in high school, dude." I'm like, "Yeah, dude." And then he was like, "Get this, man. You want a black tooth?" I'm like, "Yeah, please." You know, and
the
then
famous black tooth grin.
Oh my God! And then he gives me a silver bullet can, which I still have in my safe.
Oh, you kept it?
In my safe. I don't have anything in my safe except for that can, dude. It's so sad. I don't have jewels. I don't have money or gold. I have the Dimebag Coors can in my safe. And then he gave me a red cup, which I held on to for a while. It eventually broke, but he gave me the black tooth. He pulled the poster. I said, "Hey, Dime, can you sign one of the posters?" They had a Far Beyond Driven poster on the wall inside. He took it off the wall. He signed it. Rex signed it. And Vinny signed it. Phil wasn't around. And then Big Val, security guard, came on. He was like, "Hey, guys, we got to go. The guys have been waiting out there." And I was like, "I was part of that crew, Dime." And he was like, "Oh, hey, man." And then Dime was like, "We got to go, everyone. Come on. We got to go." So then Dime got all the troops. And then we walked. And I walked with Dimebag.
That's cool.
To this whatever was left over of the small meet and greet, including my friend Jerome. And he ran over to me. He was like, with his eyes all bugging. I was like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa." And then he didn't even talk to me. He ran over to Dime and the guys to get, you know, so that his ticket signed and stuff. So Dime, you know, made me feel so great. He made me feel so cool. I was nobody in all these people, but he stopped doing what he was doing, and then I pulled out a joint, and then I smoked it with him, and he laughed how small mine was, and it was all like shriveled up because I was in the pit. And then he had a big bomber. He was like, "Take a hit of this," and I was like, "Oh my God!" You know,
just think about Dime. Like just imagine if a fan came in now while we're talking and hanging out. The reaction would not be that. Like, yeah. I would be like, "Hey, man, you got to go. Like, you can't be back here." But he was the opposite, just completely embracing you and having this great moment.
And ever since that moment, Chris, I've been a disciple of Dimebag Darrell. I've been everything. I mean, the death. Oh my God. 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 But just I'm a disciple, dude, and I love the way he made me feel, and he made other people feel, and he was always that dude, a positive guy, you know, just a loving, good dude, and I love that. And I take some of his teachings, the teachings of Ozzy, you know, the teachings of Papa Het, you know, and I put these things into my body, and I, this is, you know, how I molded myself, you know,
right,
what I mean?
Right.
Dimebag, I mean, just weed and metal and Dean guitars, and I'm a Dean guitar dude, that's all I play, I mean, just because of Dime. And so I got a really cool Dimebag portrait tattooed from Bob Tyrell.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, you can't see it, but it's really beautiful. I
That's
posted
really
up on my socials. Yeah, I mean, our dog is Rocky Dimebag. You know, if I had a son, I'd probably name him, you know, Dime.
Dime.
You know?
But Dime Magnan.
Ozzy actually is what I want to name.
Ozzy.
Yeah, just if I ever had a son. That's what Melissa's done.
So when you're talking about Dime, when you meet him as a fan. So when you've been serious for 17 years.
17 years.
You have guys come in the studio all the time. Has there been some wild moments in the studio where guys come in, maybe a little bit lit up, or is something pretty cool?
I think the thing that jumps out to my head is my first interview ever at Sirius, and it was with Zakk Wylde.
I knew at some point his name was going to come up, because that's a character.
And he was drinking at the time, and he brought a 12-pack of Beck's, and he had chains around his neck, and he just came in, and he was like, "What's up?" And I'm like, "Hey, Zakk, hi, you know, here's an interview." And he's like, where are we going, you know? And it's just like, he just took control.
Yeah.
And then we got into the studio, and it was my first interview, and I was so nervous, and I had questions written down, I had all my stuff, the flow and everything, you know, I think I even typed it out, and it went nothing to that. And It was embarrassing. He was just drinking. I tried to ask things, and he didn't answer. He was in control, and I was completely not in control. And I was just like, this is it. Like, I'm never going to be asked to do interviews. This is the last one. But he whipped me into shape, man, as my very first interview. And I think that was the craziest one. No, nothing's ever really been negative or bad, you know. Nothing's ever happened that was like violent or anything crazy.
People,
you know,
that you're the real deal, and so when they're talking with you, it's a cool experience. Yeah,
I try to always make it cool. You know, I don't bring up the dark stuff. I don't like to talk about dark stuff.
Me too.
So many journalists will try to get
scoop,
that moment.
Yeah,
and then just try to get that headline moment. I don't do that to my friends. I won't do that. Mm-hmm. And if they say things, I'll take it out and I won't air it. And just because I know it won't look good or whatever, I don't ever want to. And I just, even when Vinny's always on the air with me, like, I don't talk about, you're going to do a Pantera reunion, Vinny?
I mean, how, like, many times?
Oh, my God. I could probably have a cool conversation with him about that and talk about ideas and things and help talk to him about it. But that's, I don't want
to
do that.
But so you,
I don't
want to
put him in that situation.
You have to lead into that, too. Like, if I had Slash on before Guns N' Roses, and Slash is my bro, and I know he loves dinosaurs, and I know he loves horror movies. And that's, I like both those. So we talked about dinosaurs and horror movies. Then we started talking about the Stones, and this is like an hour in. Then he starts talking about when Guns N' Roses opened for the Stones. So now he's talking about Guns N' Roses. The door's open. I just let him continue to talk. And then, of course, the natural progression.
Of course, you have to ask those buzz questions if you're there and you're set up for those cool things.
But once it goes, it's like, wow, he's talking about GNR.
That's,
if you open the interview with that, it's going to shut you down
away. But so many people just want to do that. And I'm thinking long term.
Right.
I want these dudes to be stoked to come back the next time. And then, like, oh, we're not doing press. We're not doing anything. Oh, Jose? Oh, yeah, we'll do that.
There you go.
Of course we'll do Jose. What time? Where?
Fun,
Where do we go? What do we do? Anything, you know? So that kind of thing is really cool to have that that love, you know, from all these different dudes, man. You know, I do. I know you have a lot of listeners, Chris, and I just want to bring up something, too, that a lot of people always ask me, like, how did I get here and stuff? I want to just say, think about education.
Please.
And going to school. Like, I went to school to be a pharmacist.
Really?
I'm a chemistry major from University of Arizona.
Wow.
I had 220 people graduating from Douglas High School, and out of 220 people, I had the third most amount of scholarships from academics. I got a full ride to University of Arizona, and I just took out loans to buy music equipment and weed and stuff like that. My parents were super poor, my family, and I went to Arizona, and that's where I started college radio. When I was going to majoring in chemistry, I had a dude. I was taking Spanish guitar class, and this dude, I had long hair, and I was playing Metallica before class, and this guy comes up, nerdy dude, and he was like, hey man, you like metal? And I'm playing Metallica, and I'm like, what does it look like? You know, I throw my hair back, you know, and I'm just riffing. And he's like, hey, I work at the radio station. We don't have a metal show. Why don't you come in and maybe check it out? And I'm like, I'm not a DJ, you know? And I'm just playing.
I'm a serious musician.
Yeah, I'm all right, sorry, guy. And then Matt was so cool to me weeks and weeks and weeks into class. He kept on telling me, inviting me to the station. And I finally went to the station, walked in. I saw a Korn poster, Rage Against the Machine poster. I was like, wow. It was in the basement of the student union. I was like, this is so cool. I met the program director, the music director. They were so cool to me. They were like, hey, you're the metal guy that I heard about? And I'm like, yeah, I'm the metal guy. And then they were like, hey, well, it'd be cool to have a metal show. We haven't had one here yet. And I'm like, dude, I'll do it. So I started a metal show when I was 18 in Tucson, majoring in chemistry, University of Arizona onto grad school, Tennessee, University of Tennessee College of Pharmacy. It was number 7 pharmacy school in the country. Applied to Colorado, Arizona, and Tennessee, and I got into all of them when I wanted to do something different, you know, and I went to Tennessee. And I was there, and I got a job at the FM rock station going to grad school. I used to call the program director in the afternoon and bug him. I got recommendations from people in the industry from doing college radio. They were like, hey, meet this kid. He's moved into town. The dude, finally, I was so persistent when I would call him up like every week and just ask him to come into the radio station. He'd be like, dude, I don't have time. Finally, he was like, all right, Jose, just come in on Friday, you know? And I came in, I gave him an air check of my college radio tape, and he was like, you're horrible. He told me that. He was like, you're not ready for radio, but you can help in the promotions department. And so the next week I was there with the music director, and somebody called out, and then the guy asked me to fill in that night, Friday night. And I was like, dude, but Addison said, I'm not ready. And he was like, dude, I got this. Dude, Dave Clapper, I love you, brother. And he believed in me, and he was like, no, do it. And I did my first show, 12 a.m. to 6 a.m.
Yeah.
And overnight in Memphis, Tennessee, and the guys showed up around 3:30. Both bosses and the production director, they walked in, they were all like pissed off looking, and then they all just broke out laughing and smiling. They were like, dude, nice job, Jose.
Oh, killer.
And I was like, oh, whoa. So then I became fill-in, so I became the rock and roll pharmacist, dude. I was going to grad school. People knew me that I was also doing radio, and I started doing cool things, and people were cool. Like, I was the rock and roll pharmacist. And then a year in, I won an award for Best Metal DJ in the Album Network, which was an industry trade magazine. And I was Best Metal Director and DJ. And so I was featured in this little magazine, and I started getting like offers to work in the industry. And then people were like, hey, you ever thought about working? I was like, I'm going to pharmacy school. I'm going to be a doctor in 3 years. You know, like, I only have 3 years left. And they were like, well, just want to come to New York. We'll fly you out. Just come check it out. Never been. And I went there, and I fell in love, and I couldn't believe what New York City was and mm-hmm. what it offered. And TBT Records wanted me to be their national director of radio promotions for metal and alternative mm-hmm. to talk to dudes like me. And I was like, wow. And they paid me nothing, you know. But at the time, I was like, I never had a real job. I had a bunch of part-time jobs. And so before I made the move to I called my dad up, and then my dad was 49 when I was born. He was much older. People thought he was my grandpa, but right. he was always an academics guy. He said, you know, he taught. He was super, super smart, super smart. All of his kids, he has another family before my mom from Mexico, and he has, they're all lawyers, doctors, you know, they're deans of university. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're crazy smart.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So my dad, I told my dad the situation, and he was like, don't regret this. Do this.
Wow.
And I was like, dad, but what about all the school, all that, my student loans, all? And he was like, don't regret this. You've been into heavy metal music your whole life. That's all you've done, and now you have this opportunity. And he's like, don't do it. And I was like, dad, are you sure? And then he was like, dude, you know, and he told me a story that he regretted going to the army. He wanted to be a lawyer, but instead he fought in the Korean War, and he's disabled, and he got in the Korean War, and he always regretted that decision of following what family pressure to go be military versus he wanted to be a lawyer. Yeah, and he always regretted it, and he never told me the story. And then he cried, and I cried, and I was like, wow. And then so boom, New Jersey. I moved to the ghetto of New Jersey, and I worked out there. But
so basically drop out of pharmacy school.
I left a year. Yeah, I left actually about 6 months after that. After I knew that I was moving to Jersey, instead of paying for the second year of pharmacy school, I stayed another semester, and I taught at the University of Memphis. I was a lab instructor, and I worked at a Mexican restaurant and on the radio station. And at the Veterans Hospital. I had a bunch of jobs.
Gotcha.
I'm Mexican, dude. I gotta have a bunch of jobs. So then, I moved out to Jersey, started at TBT Records, and then 7 months later, that's when I got the job to move to Sirius.
Now, when you first started Sirius, they bring you in as a DJ?
They brought me in as a programming coordinator.
Okay.
So, but we didn't, there weren't DJs at the time, you know what I mean? We were just building a channel, so I became one, but it was never part of my job description.
By necessity.
Eventually, it was just like, you know, I always knew that I was going to be the DJ on the metal channel. I wanted to, but it wasn't like, you know, when we first were testing the services out, which was really cool, before anybody was subscribing, they were just engineers listening to the channels. First, it was music to space and back. How does that sound? Then it was music production to space and back. How does that sound? Now, how about music production and voices? How does that sound? And so I was the dude testing it for about 9 months, just testing, like, no one was listening, but I thought people were listening, and I would just do a radio show every single day.
Yeah.
And that's how I just, and then I never stopped.
When you're talking about being serious for 17 years, even in that building, because I've been there many times, and there's always people floating around mm-hmm. that even that you're not talking to. Have you seen like some people walk through there that you just went, oh my God? Like,
oh, yeah, dude. My office was the coolest office in the entire building. It was certified.
You had the Jaeger machine in there?
I had the Jaeger tap machine, yeah. And I just had the coolest looking office and the most inviting, and it was always a stop on tours. Whether they're executives or Oprah or Justin Bieber or whoever, dude. Robert Plant walking by, and I'm like, that dude looks familiar. And he's looking at me in my office, and I'm looking at him. Oh, man. And then it's like, whoa, that was Robert Plant. You know, he made eye contact. Yeah, Justin Bieber came into my office. He was like, hey, what's up? And I was like, oh, hey, Justin. Katy Perry, famous one. It's a cool story. I was super baked in the morning. I'm a big cannabis fan. And I was pouring my cereal. I used to eat cereal, and I'd go to the kitchen and pour the milk in and go back to my desk and on my ball chair and eat some, like, cereal. And I would do that for years. And I was going to the kitchen once, and I was pouring my cereal, and then Katy Perry walked in. I didn't know who it was. I just thought it was a hot chick.
Yeah.
And she walked in. She's like, hey, what's up? And I'm like, hi. I'm holding my cereal. And she's like, hey, what's up? You're and I'm like, and I know you're right. I'm like, I don't think so, but hot, you know? And then I'm like, are you a rock person, you know, because I hosted a TV show on the time Latin Nation. I didn't know if she saw me. I didn't know. And then she was like, no, but don't. And then she came to my office. She's like, and maybe I don't know. What do you do? And then I was just telling her, and then she was like, oh, she was looking around, and I still didn't know who she was. And she was like talking to me and being super friendly and super nice, and like, are you sure you're not this guy? And my office mate, who programs the Reggae Channel, she was sitting down. There was a little divider in our office, so she didn't see who it was, but she can hear.
Heard, right?
And then I was so like high and getting super nervous because there was this hot chick that was like getting on me, dude. And I was like freaking out. And then I kind of stopped talking and I got weird. Mm-hmm. And she was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to go now. And I'm like, okay. And then she walked away. And then my office mate, she was like, that girl, she just wanted you. And then she started telling me all this stuff. I was like, oh, whatever. I was like, couldn't talk, you know? And I went out to the kitchen. And then this dude was like, dude, what was Katy Perry saying to you? I was like, what? That was Katy Perry? Shut the fuck up, dude. And then when she finished with the president, she came back. And I came out with my cereal. And I said, hey, Katie, I'm sorry, I didn't know it was you. And she was like, I know, and I love that. And then she grabbed my arm, and she walked with me, and she grabbed like a arm lock, you know, and walked, like, and I was walking her like a wedding thing, and down the big hallway, and people were like, what the dude? And she's like, walk me to the elevator. And I walked her to the elevator, and, you know, we hugged, and we took a cool selfie, and then she left. And so that was super cool. But that's the kind of – I miss that kind of run-in. You know, I mean the, just Cardinals and nuns and Pat Sajak and, you know –
Cardinals and nuns and Pat Sajak.
Tony Bennett running into Slayer and meeting each other.
Wow.
And then Tony knew Slayer, the right. name.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they were like, Mr. Bennett, you know, all of a sudden Kerry King, you know, everybody takes off his glasses. You know what I'm saying? Super polite. Everybody just like Slayer. You know, I'm gonna eat meat. And then Tony Bennett, hey, Mr. Bennett,
right.
All proper and cool. Yeah. And I was like, this is cool, Tony Bennett and Slayer.
See, and that's cool because he's heard the name, but guys like Slayer see a legendary guy like Tony Bennett. It's like, you know, it's not like he's not heavy metal. It's like, it's Tony Bennett.
No, it's cool, and I love that bands got that chance and still get that chance to meet other famous people outside of their world, and that's a really good run-in place.
Adrian Smith told me that. He met Paul McCartney once, and Paul, whatever they were doing, Paul's like, oh, you're in a band? He's like, yeah, I'm in a band. It's Iron Maiden. He goes, oh, yeah, the one with the monster.
Oh, nice.
So he knew the band with the monster.
That's so cool. That has to be a trip, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's so many cool run-ins. I mean, I took an elevator ride with Nelly once, and I had a shot of Jaeger, and I was bringing it down to my wife, and he was just tripping out that it was freezing cold, and I was all bundled up, and on the elevator I was just holding a shot of Jaeger and going down the elevator, and Nelly was like, dude, like, what, you know?
This is cool.
There's so many, dude. I've met a lot of cool people. When Stern would have guests on, and I would get to work around 9:30, and a lot of times his big guests were coming out, and so I would see them, and I would be listening on the walk over and the bus ride over, and then I would be like, I'm probably gonna see them. I'm gonna beat them, you know, because I'm like timing it out, and then it's like, oh, so many.
How about Howard? Do you ever have any?
Howard is so cool, dude. When he first came to Sirius, we had his very first. Well, I mean, that's the whole story. I mean, just when he said that he was coming to Sirius, that was
made the company.
Dude, it was. My wife used to worked in the city, and sometimes I would take a ride with her, and she dropped me off early one day. It was like 8 o'clock in the morning, and there was nobody in the headquarters. And I was in my office. It was dark, and I got a call from my friend Chris Poland, who owns Eclipse Records, and he called me. He's like, "Congrats, dude! Howard is coming to Sirius," and it was so early, and I'm like, "Dude, what? What are you talking about?" And he was like, "Dude, put on K-Rock right now. Put on the radio." And I was like, all right. And I put on, and then I just hear him, Howard, boom, "Serious." And no. And that's why I'm like, dude, I was like, "Chris, thank you, dude, for calling me. I'll call you back." And I hung up, and I just sat there in the dark, dude. And I sound like a pussy, but I cried. I cried another time. I told you two different times I cried. But
why
I cried,
would you cry that Stern's coming?
I cried in my office by myself, dude, because I knew how much it was going to change my life. I knew the rock channels were going to explode. And I knew. And then you asked a question earlier about the power that we have. That's when it started. Because before, it was like we would ask for Slipknot, and you know, we'd be like, "Oh, we got to go to AOL. Sorry, we don't got time for you. But we're satellite radio. We got Click." Yeah. You know, "Hey, none of that Cyrus. We don't have time for that Click." You know. But then, you know, years later, whatever. But when Stern came, and I knew his fans were rock fans, and I knew when they came, they were gonna come and listen to my channels.
Right.
And then I sat there, and I was like, "My life is going to change today. And it did. It changed. The profile of Sirius became giant, right? And then the rock channels became giant. And then along with that, you know, I was blessed to be on that cool ride. And then you talked about, you know, the profile, the image, the Jose brand. I mean, if it wasn't for SiriusXM, I wouldn't have that,
right?
You know, but that, and then just being good, the bands and fans and everything, and just being good and good and good and just good and believing in bands and Volbeat. We were the first to play Volbeat. Nobody believed in that shit. I remember my boss at the time was like, "What's their story?" I was like, "There is no story. We're their story. You know, why can't we be the story?
Right.
Why does it have to be a story outside of us? Why can't we start it? Why can't we start the story?" You know, and then I played Still Counting on the radio on Octane. Boom. Mic drop.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
fucking
totally,
mic drop,
yeah.
Chris. Dude. So that kind of stuff, when we're able to do that for bands and for everything. But Howard, so the question, Howard, when he had his first meeting with us, he was on top of the stairs in the lobby in New York City, you kind of say it.
Yeah.
And he was like looking down at us, and he was like,
"Us being all the employees."
Yeah, yeah. There was a bunch of us there. And he was like, he told us why he came in Sirius. And he was like, "It's stations like this dude station, Heart Attack, that made me want to come." And he pointed me out, and he mentioned a few other channels, but he pointed me out, and he doesn't know me. He didn't know I had, you know, but I was right up near him, and I was just so f-ing happy that he was there, and he knew it, and everybody knew it, and he pointed me out. So from that moment, Howard's been so cool to me. I've written questions, appeared on the show. I was on a show segment, Gay or Not Gay, when Howard was like, "Oh, game over." It was George Takei, and it was for George. He was supposed to guess who the gay guy was, and Artie, Robin, and Howard. And then I walk in, and Howard was like, "Oh, game over." And then Robin was like, "Why?" And he's like, "Oh, I know who's gay. It's Jose. Jose's gay." And I'm like, "Howard, I haven't said anything, dude." He's like, "You don't have to. Look at you. You're gay, dude."
Look at your eyebrows.
And as he said, "Look at your eyebrows." And I was like, "What, dude?" And then he's just drilled into me. But he knew. He was super cool.
Yeah.
And then I was on another time, and where I was able to come on as Jose, and come on as a lover of him and of the company and what I do for rock. And I just wanted to thank him for changing my life. Mm-hmm. You know, and I had that time, that cool appearance. I had like 13 minutes with him.
That's
and
cool.
I was able, yeah. And I didn't curse. I didn't do anything, you know, bad or embarrassing to my family or my employer. You know what I mean? It was pure. Yeah. It was a pure appearance, and I came out of there like, what a rush. What a rush. But Howard is so cool to me, and he was like, I said, "I love you, Howard." He was like, "I love you too, Jose. Quit being a weirdo," you know, because
I got you.
So, but he was so cool, and Howard, man. I love you, Howard.
A couple last questions. I know you mentioned music a few times, playing guitar and having, you know, music equipment. And I know you've guested on a lot of different, you've done vocals on stage. Tell us, like, what are your favorite moment of being on stage singing? Because you got a great growl.
Thank you, Chris, yeah. Dude. Oh, man. My favorite moment singing on stage. You know what, man? I mean, there was big moments where I sang pieces of songs like Indians with Anthrax, who are one of my all-time favorite bands, like Big Four. I got up and Joey made me get up, and I was like, no. Like, no. And he was like, I was like sitting, like crunching, like behind an amp, like right on the stage with Anthrax and Big Four, and he made me get up and kind of come out to him.
Right.
And we did a piece of Indians. Like, that's crazy. Singing Davidian with Rob Flynn at Machine Head when they opened up for Metallica in the Round Stadium. And I remember it was my first time on a Round Stadium. Like, what mic do I go to? Which one, Rob? You know, and I went to Rob's mic and I sang Let Freedom Ring with a Shotgun Blast, you know, in front of a Prudential Center in Newark, nice. New Jersey. It was so cool. But I would say that my favorite... Oh, man. Singing Desperate Cry with Max Cavalera probably like 5 or 6 times.
That's your jam.
That's I love Sepultura. I've done Territory and I've done Desperate Cry with Max. Desperate Cry the most times. He's one of my idols. That's so much fun. But I think the thing that I've done the most and the thing that sticks out the most, and it's a cool because it comes back to you, King. Singing Pantera Revolution Is My Name with King. We've done that probably...
You just did it acoustically,
yes,
didn't you?
Yes, we did. Yeah. We were going to do it again today.
Maybe today, yeah.
We're going to do it again acoustic today. And just singing that on stage probably a dozen times all over the country. And I love Pantera. To be able to sing that song, I did it at Dime Bash with King.
Right.
And Phil was there and Dave Grohl was watching and, you know, all these other dudes were like watching me. Robert Trujillo. Who else was there? Wasn't there, you know? And they were watching me sing Pantera. That was pretty cool. But I think, you know, singing with King, doing Revolution Is My Name.
That's because
I love them. They're my favorite band out there. They're my closest friends. You know, they're the ones I support the most. And they're my family dudes. And so I think doing it with those guys, that's my favorite.
So.
Yeah.
What's your goal now, Jose, for SiriusXM, for Liquid Metal? For what you're doing,
man. I just, you know, I, Chris, I look up to you, you know, in a lot of cool ways as a professional in this business. I want to do more, you know. I want to be like Ryan Seacrest, you know what I'm saying? I want to like do a lot of cool things, like have my hands in a lot of cool. Ryan's doing the Today Show, the Regis Show,
in the
morning, and he's doing his FM show, and he might be doing another TV show, and he's doing a countdown,
right?
And you know, and he's producing TV shows. Like, I want to do shit like that. Like, I want to be The Rock. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, I have to, you know, Sharon Osbourne gave me really cool advice, and this is really cool for you too, you and for you listening. You know, if you dream it, visualize it. Keep visualizing what you want to do. Keep burning that in your head. Keep thinking about it. Keep thinking about it and take the steps to get to that point. You know, whatever that may be, but just I'm visualizing cool shit. You know, I want to do good. I want, you know, my tequila company, Riazul, you know, I want that to be awesome. You know, I want to have my own cool festival. You know, I want to put on cool help Danny or something. I want to do TV stuff, dude. I feel like I have more to offer. Like, I want to do TV shows, whether it's on Me and My Family or if it's just me hosting a cool game show or something. Like, I want to do cool shit. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not done. I want to be in a horror movie. I want to do a chick and smoke a joint and then die Jason Voorhees style. You know, I'm talking to Dee Snider about in Strangeland 2. Hopefully I get to suffer in one of those. But I want to do a lot, dude. And, you know, in 6 years, my kids are going to be in college, man. It's crazy.
Right.
So I'll be 46 years old and I'll be able to be like, oh shit, like,
now you got lots more time.
What else can I do to leave a cool legacy, to leave a cool mark, you know? What else can I do? Mm-hmm. You know, so I really want to do a lot, and SiriusXM is always, they're gonna have to kill me to not be on the radio. Like, I'll always do that no matter what,
right?
Because I can do my show from anywhere,
right?
Anywhere I go,
you can, yeah.
I can program and I can do my show from right here, from anywhere. I just tether to my cell phone and that internet works to my cell phone and get it on my laptop. I can do my show from there. So, and put it right into the system and not rely on any help. now. So I just want to do a lot, dude. I'm vice president of Affliction Clothing. You know, they're so good to me. I really just want to help the brand, and they've been just so awesome to my family, and I've been so loyal since 2007. I've been with the company as an employee since 2012, but just, it's crazy, you know, what they just like do everything you do, and everything you do, we do. Because I'm always in Affliction.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
He was like, they were like, dude, go and do everything.
Dude,
we got your back.
I know Rich was looking for a white leather jacket for the last Fozzie photo shoot. He said, I called Jose, he got me a white leather jacket.
Yep. Yeah, of course. Pretty cool. Dude, I love hooking up my friends too. I mean, I'm a big fan of the clothes. I mean, there's just a lot of cool things that I want to do, Chris. And I think I'm just starting. I want to write a book like you someday.
Nice.
I know you've done a few, and Corey's done a few. You know, I look up to you guys. You know, you guys are busy dudes. Like, Josta, you know,
he's a hustler.
Joe Rogan, you know, these dudes, Howard Stern, you know what I mean? These are dudes. My boss at Affliction, the owner, Courtney Dubar, these are hustlers, dude. You know, these are dudes that don't stop working.
Yeah.
And I love that. That's how I am, you know, and that's sometimes, you know, my wife will be like, you're really on the computer right now. I'm like, babe, I'm sorry, I'm traveling and I have to get ahead. Like, I have to, can I do it? You understand the same thing. So it is nonstop, but, you know, having the time for the family and raising them and loving them and smothering them with love and you know, being super involved and chaperoning dances and things like that. You know, everything that I can do to be involved with that. You know, so there's a lot, dude. I still have a lot to give to the world, Chris. Yeah, man.
Last question.
Yes,
sir. If you have to pick one, what's your favorite album of all time?
Favorite album of all time. I mean, it's easy. I mean, it's easy. Pantera, Vulgar Display of Power.
All right.
Yeah, I have to go with that. I mean, that album from the beginning to the end has some of the most.
That's the masterpiece.
Yeah, I mean, that's that, and it's either. I mean, Master Puppets is super close to this, and so is Rust in Peace in my opinion.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna go with Vulgar Display of Power, Pantera. That's you know, that's a big fuse in my heart, man. So that's my favorite right there.
And today you'll be singing Pantera with King.
Yeah, I do. I preach the good gospel of Pantera everywhere. I have a CFH tattoo on my right hand, so when I shake people's hands, they're like, you know, Cowboys from Hell, and I'm like, yeah, brother, goddamn right, boom, bro hug, fist bump, whatever it is, man.
Thanks, dude. You're awesome.
No problem, Chris. Thanks, Jericho. Hell yeah.
All right, who's got more love for rock and roll and heavy metal than Jose Mangan? Great guy, so enthusiastic, and what an entrepreneur. Big things in store for Jose. I love talking music with him. Got some incredible stories. And speaking of stories, how about some truly ridiculous news stories from Team Tiger Awesome?
This is the news with Team Tiger Awesome. In local news, a man with scissors for hands has had trouble filling out complicated business forms. Sources close to the man, known to his friends as Scissor Hands Guy, say until he can start his business, he'll just keep trimming hedges for cash until he's run out of town by misunderstanding jocks. In sporting news, your favorite sports team is better than their record would indicate. If those stupid umpires hadn't made all those bad calls, or if the other team hadn't so blatantly cheated, your favorite sports team would have won all the games. And now a look at the synonym index. Inflammable is on fire, breaking into the top 5. Dropping plummets to number 4. Steady holds fast at 3. Second is not first in succeeding weeks. And the uppermost spot is singularly number 1. For more news you thought went bad, but when you smell it, you realize it'll last a few more days, listen to the Team Tiger Awesome Show every Sunday on the Jericho Network on Podcast 1.
Yeah, typical, crazy Team Tiger fake news. You want real fake news? Team Tiger's got it for you. Go subscribe to the Team Tiger Awesome Show at Apple Podcasts. Be sure to leave them a 5-star rating and review as well. Leave all the Jericho Network podcasts 5-star ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts. Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus. This week they continue with Cyrus live in Japan. Rock Talk with Mitch LaFon. He's got so much great stuff. Gene Simmons, Genesis, all of them on there. Go check out the Bruce Kulick Revenge show that he did a few weeks ago. That was great. Raven Effect, as Raven continues his wrestling time in Portland, The Origins, and the flagship show, Keeping It 100 with Conan. This week, special guest, my dad, Ted Irvin, to talk all things hockey and all things me, I guess. And Beyond the Darkness, get your paranormal fix every weekday with brand new episodes 5 days a week. And you can get in there True Crime Tuesdays as well. Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, the two gents behind Beyond the Darkness, are doing a weekly True Crime podcast. But you can only get that by signing up at patreon.com for just $5 a month. You'll get a new episode every single Tuesday, and the episodes are all commercial free.
No commercials. So sign up now at patreon.com. And one last big thank you to this episode's tremendous sponsors and to all of you for supporting them. DDP Yoga. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to get 20% off the DDP Yoga Now app and all DDPY related merch. True Car, check that out. It's cheaper, it's easier, and the best car buying experience you can have. And of course, Geico, save money on car insurance. Thank you so much for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next Wednesday. Who do we got? Let me go through my little Rolodex of rock. Oh, yeah. A few weeks ago, we talked with Bruno Sammartino. He is actually going to be on next Wednesday for sure. And what a conversation with one of the OGs of pro wrestling. And, man, 50 years of wrestling experience. And very riveting, riveting stuff. We did this interview in an Italian restaurant in Pittsburgh. That was Bruno's insistence. We had to do the interview in a restaurant. And the ambiance is great. The conversation is great. And Bruno is in his 80s, and he's still very lucid and has some tremendous stories. You're going to love it. Bruno Sammartino makes his Talk as Jericho debut. Thank you so much for listening. And thanks to everybody who came and rocked with us the last few weeks, especially at Download and in Milton Keynes and Chester. Both of them sold out. Both of them just so hot. Sweat boxes. I think the Milton Keynes show is the hottest show that we've ever played in Fozzy. I almost passed out four or five times. But looking forward to going back to the UK, Ireland, Scotland, and of course Europe as well. But lots more to do until then. So we'll see you on Wednesday with Bruno Sammartino. In the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.